This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At halftime, Jim, Beast Mode calls me. I'm in my jacuzzi. He calls me. He's like, dude, did they call you yet? I'm like, bro, aren't you in the middle of a game? He's like, I don't care about that. Did they call you yet? If not, I'm not going back out there. 15 minutes later, John Snyder gives me a call and asks me how I'm feeling. And the next day I was on a plane.
Hey, now it's cracking. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to all of you. Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast, episode 294, where my guest this week is a Super Bowl champion, a former Pro Bowler. He played 8 years in the NFL with the Niners and the Seahawks. Longtime NFL fullback Michael Robinson, M-Rob, hit the league as the 100th pick overall in the 06 draft. He built a reputation as one of the baddest, toughest and most versatile fullbacks in the NFL. Since he is retired, he has built a reputation as one of the best and most knowledgeable analysts in the game at NFL Network and NBC Sports. In fact, you can catch him on NFL Network's NFL Total Access every Tuesday and Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Great spot. You want to check that out for sure. Or you can catch him right here on The Original Hustle. It is episode 294 with former Super Bowl champ Michael Robinson, and it's coming at you right now. So, Michael, it is the best time of year, but it is the busiest time of year, my man. So I really appreciate you making time for this. It is great to have you on this pod. Michael, how you doing?
Hey, man, doing great, man. Glad to have caught up with you, man. I talked to you years ago as I was going into the draft, and then a couple times when I played, man. So it was definitely great to be on your show.
Dude, I appreciate you so much. I appreciate that you remember that. That is true. I was thinking the exact same thing. It's been more than a minute, so I'm glad you and I can get caught up. You know, I want to talk for a minute about your situation because obviously you've had a tremendous second career off the field working for really high-profile platforms like NBC, NFL Network. Personally, I don't think that's by accident. When did you first start thinking about and working towards your life after football?
Probably in high school. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. We have a specialty center at the high school that I went to, Verona High School. And it was the TV and broadcasting type of a deal. So there was a specialty center at my high school. So I kind of did that for a year, my last year in high school. And I grew a love for it. And I always knew that once I'm done playing, I still wanted to be able to be around it. And then I started to realize what my superpower was in football was not necessarily that I could run fast, block and all that stuff and throw and all of that. But what it was being able to think very clearly in high pressurized situations, which helped me in the broadcasting world. And so got into college, got into the National Football League and kind of honed that skill. Like you said, it's not by mistake where I am where I am. I wanted to be doing this when I was done playing football.
Dude, I absolutely love that you were able to identify and hone in on a superpower. Like that superpower, go back to that for a minute. Was that something, are you hardwired for that? Were you born with that? Or did you realize I could cultivate this, improve upon this, and that could be my separation?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of, you know, obviously I think I'm born with a little bit of something there. And then I had a youth football coach when I was like 8 or 9 years old. Basically, we were getting ready for a game. It was a lot of people playing and messing around. And I kind of screamed on everybody like, yo, chill out, man. We got a game, man. Let's get ready for it. And I remember that head coach pulling me to the side and he's saying, dude, like, these kids don't listen to me like that. You know what I mean? And he was the first one to tell me, man, when you speak, people listen. And that can be, you can make a lot of money. You can influence a lot of people, but it also, it takes a great responsibility. You got to watch the things that you read. You got to watch the movies that you watch, the shows that you look at, because again, when you speak, people listen, and you have a responsibility to make sure people are listening to you the right way. And so just the people in my life have kind of cultivated that. My mother, she raised my brother and I as a single parent. And so just seeing her strength and seeing the things that she went through just kind of helped me identify what I was good at. And then I said, hey, man, why not just kind of parlay this into a career, something that I actually like doing.
All right. So I love that for two different reasons. I love that moms took that on and she made so many sacrifices for you and your brother to be where you are. And I love that you had a coach that said you have to be very careful about what you see and what you watch. Like, you always hear that phrase, Michael, you are what you eat, but in reality, you are what you consume. It's not just what you eat, man. It's everything you watch, everything you see, everything you process. You know, you see so many athletes right now that, and I get this, they go right to consumer because they can control the message. They've got their own platforms. You were way out in front of this, though. Back in the day, you created the Real Rob Report. When did you do that, and what kind of content were you pushing out back then?
Yeah, this was kind of when the lockout and all of that stuff was happening, right after the 2010 season, going into the 2011 season, that offseason. And it was called the Rookie Report when I first started it with the San Francisco 49ers. That turned into the Robinson Report, where I basically just was cracking jokes on people in the locker room. Niners PR were great with me. And again, I knew I wanted to get into the media side when everything was said and done. And so I just didn't want, when I was getting paid to be an on-air talent, I didn't want to make all of my mistakes there. I wanted to make my mistakes while I was a player in the National Football League and everybody still wanted to hear what I had to say. And so I definitely created it there. And then when I got to Seattle, you know, it was the lockout. You know what I'm saying? My first year there, I didn't actually do it in 2010. I did it again going into 2011, my second year there. And I just wanted to kind of cover what guys were doing during the lockout, because we didn't know how long this thing was going to happen and how long this thing was going to last. And so that kind of parlayed into me sitting in front of my locker during media sessions during the week, and guys, you know, started coming up to me. We started coming up with ideas. I started learning how to produce segments. I started writing script. And again, man, I wanted to be great at what I'm doing now. And I think all the reps that I got when I was in the National Football League creating my own show made it easier for me to get opportunities.
No,
now.
I love that, dude. I love that. And especially what you understood, I'm sure, was this was not like some side hustle and some hobby that you half-assed. You probably attacked it and approached it the same way you did the game, right? Like, I'm not saying it is the game, and I'm not saying you get the same adrenaline rush necessarily, but the process has to be similar, right? You have to take a serious approach to it.
You definitely have to. And you got to think, bro, like, I went to the Pro Bowl as a fullback, right? Fullbacks don't get in the end zone that much, but I have to be just as excited when Beast Mode gets into the end zone, because I helped him get there, right? And so that's what it's all about to me. You know what I'm saying? It's all about, you know, working hard, making sure that we get the entire show across the goal line. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, it's a lot of hard work. I watch every single game, every single play of every single game, every single week on Sundays after I come back from my college show, from doing college football in the Big Ten with NBC. I have like 6 or 7 screens going, man. I watch everything. I talk to a lot of different analysts throughout the week, as well as coaches and general managers. So I'm really in tune with like the X's and O's and kind of the evolution of offense and how different positions are changing. Right in front of our faces. Those are the things that I get excited about.
Do the work, dude. Do the work. No shortcuts, man. No hacks. Now, the funny thing about that, Michael, you're like, I'm a fullback. I don't get the end zone very often. But for those who don't know or don't remember, your career arc as a player is incredible. Like, you played quarterback in high school in Virginia, where you were a 2-time first-team All-State selection. You played quarterback at Penn State, along with being a wide receiver. And then when you got to the NFL, you were a running back before ultimately converting to fullback. I mean, dude, that is crazy. What was it like to change from running back to fullback on the NFL level?
Well, you almost don't have a chance. You almost don't have a choice if you want to stay in the National Football League. And my goal was always to make it to the National Football League. It wasn't to be an NFL quarterback. And so I asked when I first got to the San Francisco 49ers, Norv Turner was the offensive coordinator. My only wish to him was, hey, watch me take some snaps. Watch me drop back. If you don't like what you know, if you like it, hey, let's keep developing this thing. If you don't, I'll play whatever. I'll do whatever you guys need me to do. And that's when I got moved to running back, learned some things under who I believe is going to be a Hall of Fame running back, and Frank Gore. He was only a year ahead of me, but he taught me so much, man. Like, he welcomed me in, even though he knew that I got drafted a year right after him and that I should be, and I'm going to be getting some carry. So it was great by Frank to kind of just show me the ropes as a tailback. And then when we got Mike Martz, the coach of the, you know, greatest show on turf with the St. Louis Rams, he ended up being my OC in San Francisco. And that's when I officially got moved to fullback. But if you know Mike Martz's offenses, fullbacks are pretty much like another tailback. I affected the game in the passing game, and I only had to block ISOs and stuff like that part-time. But when I got to Seattle, that's when I kind of gained a little bit more weight, put on my big boy shoulder pads, and became a true fullback. But if you want to stay in the league, you do what your coaches ask you to do. And again, I wanted to win the ultimate goal, which was a Super Bowl, and I got that.
You did that too. So I've got to tell you guys about this. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's something totally different for fresh breath. It's an amazing product called Zelman's Minty Mouth, and I'm telling you, it's a game changer. If you're up in the grill with somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. Clinically tested against the toughest offenders like garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth. You suck the minty coating. Then you swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath, and it lasts 4 hours. This product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth, and then it goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath or your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you'll want it, but they will. They have free shipping if you order three packs or more. Trust me, you're going to want more, and nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com right now. You'll get 15% off when you use my promo code ROAM. That's Zelmins.com. You have to use the code Rome to get your 15% savings. Do it now. So I could follow up on any number of those things, but I want to ask you about somebody you just mentioned, and that's Frank Gore. See, now, in what I do, I have my listeners, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds, but I've got a small minority of morons that when Frank played would always kind of clown this guy for being like the oldest guy in the world, older than dirt, this, that, and the other. I'm like, man, you don't, how do I say this? You don't fucking understand about Frank Gore. Frank Gore, everybody who knows that Frank Gore is a freaking legend, dude. He's an icon. He's a beast. He's a man. Whatever you want to say about Frank Gore as a footballer, it's all true. What was it like? I mean, help me make this argument, Michael. This guy was incredible in the way he approached it, the way he worked it, the way he played. What would you say about Frank Gore as a football player?
I'd say this. First of all, I think the guy averaged 295 yards rushing one of his years in high school. Think about that. He grew up in Florida. Okay, he grew up in Florida where all the speed, all the athletes are down there, and he averaged 295 yards a game.
It's a joke. Okay,
I just think about that for a second. All right, that's number one. Number two, I've had an opportunity to be around some great running backs like Clint Portis. Edgerrin James, guys that went to the University of Miami, Najee Davenport, all of these guys. And every single one of them, not some of them, not two or three, every one of them say Frank Gore is the most talented guy they have ever seen. Every last one of them. And then when I look at it on tape, I don't care if you talk about when he was with the Jets at the end of his career or Indy at the end of his career, or whether he was running down the football field with the San Francisco 49ers in his heyday. There has not been a back of this generation to have the eyes that Frank Gore has. He's able to make lemonade out of lemons. He's able to get a yard when there's nothing there. And again, these are top backs in the National Football League still watch this guy's tape to figure out how he moved people at the second level and how he was able to get yards. And so I know his boxing career maybe is not where his football career was, but definitely a great dude. And the great part about it is, Jim, is when I call him, I don't care if we haven't talked in months or years, when I call him, he picks up the phone. And that's a true, true sign of a great man with great character.
You nailed that. That's such a great explanation, Michael. He is. And even like when I would check in with Frank, like, you know, Frank, he's a little bit introverted with the media, yeah. But he always would come on the show, always gave us access, always said yes. I love the point that you made. When you start dropping names like Edgerrin James, Najee, I mean, the best of the best from the U, they all look up to this guy. Those guys are all icons. So that should tell you exactly what you need to know about Frank. As far as in boxing, I mean, yeah, it's not the same thing, but clearly he's searching, right? Michael, what did guys do? Mm-hmm. Like, you had a plan. You always had a plan. If that's always been your identity and you want to compete, and especially when you're used to the contact, and all of a sudden there's no outlet. Like, all of a sudden you don't have the structure, you don't have the motivation, you're no longer that guy. How hard is that for a lot of guys when the cheering stops?
Very difficult, Jim. One thing, I life coach some guys that first come out of the league or just finished playing football, because sometimes it's not the league where it's your last playing day. Sometimes it's college. Sometimes you're 21, 22 years old and you've realized there's no more football for me. What do I do now? My whole life has been defined by it. And I always tell guys, you got to find your schedule, because think about it. Like, when you're involved with the National Football League, I don't care if it's April, I know what I'm doing if I'm an NFL player. If it's September, I know what I'm doing. If it's March, I'm vacationing. I know, because that's the first month of my offseason. If it's February, I know I may be going to the Super Bowl, whether I'm playing or whether I'm, you know, going for marketing opportunities. Every month, I mean, like the football season orders your schedule. It dictates when you wake up. And so I always tell people, you first of all, you got to find a love that's going to get you up out of the bed like football did. That's why I love this new generation of kids. Now, obviously, they have some issues, too. I'm talking about from an athletic standpoint. They have some issues, too. But I'm talking about as far as these kids having other loves other than football. And I think it's great for our guys to have other loves, to be doing other things outside of football, especially in their off seasons. And these guys understand money. They get paid now in college. So from a money management standpoint, their families understand money now. And so hopefully this generation can start to build a little bit of wealth. And I know I went off a little bit of a tangent there. But guys got to find their schedule, Jim. And again, it starts with you finding something else you love just as much as you loved, like football.
And that's hard. And that's hard. And that's definitely the goal. Yeah. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, do not make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Grab instead a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper or Old Trapper Beef Jerky. It's tasty and tender. It's made from real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way, you can see exactly what you are buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Michael, you made the point that one of the things that you wanted to accomplish, you wanted to be in the NFL, you wanted to play in the NFL, you wanted to get to a Super Bowl, and you did that. You know, it becomes kind of redundant, but I ask athletes this all the time because I know, I have an idea what goes into it, the pride and the commitment. So few guys get to actually go out on their own terms. Even fewer get to walk it off on top, and you did both. Your final game was Super Bowl 48, a 43-8 win over the Broncos. You were only 31, so was that your decision, or maybe did the game let you know it was time? Share that story.
Well, first and foremost, when away games, and I remember LaDainian Tomlinson, him and I shared stories about this. When you do away games and you start missing the hell out of your family and your kids, and you start feeling that pit in your stomach, like, oh man, I'm leaving them. Like, that's when it's starting. And I started that maybe year five in the National Football League. Every away game, it's like, man, this is getting harder, man. I think I'm going to cry. You know what I'm saying? When I'm leaving, and it's just like, I'll be back in a few days. But it was just getting harder. My kids were very young. I mean, very young. And I just wanted to be around for everything. My wife was there by herself, and I just wanted to be there for her. So, you know, that was tough. You know what I mean? And that was something that I was feeling, number one. Number two, I got sick. So the start of the 2013 season, to make a long story short, I thought I had an ankle injury at the beginning of training camp. I went in to the doctors first day of training camp, said, hey, give me some Indocin. I asked for it by name, right? It's an anti-inflammatory. Asked for it. They gave it to me. A couple of days later, I started losing weight. A couple of days later after that, you know, and when I played fullback, I was a 253-pound guy during training camp. A couple of days after that, I'm down to now 231, and I'm wondering, what? I'm lifting. I'm trying to eat. How come I'm not keeping on weight? And then there were some other things going on with me biologically. And I remember playing the Denver Broncos in the second preseason game that year. And me and Von Miller, we have a great relationship. And I remember hitting him, and I went down. And he was like, damn, Mike, like, you usually give me a little bit more than that. And he helped me up. And that's when I kind of knew there was something going on. Went into the training room the next day and found out that my liver and my kidneys were failing. Based off of a rare blood trait that I had. And I basically, the Indocin that I asked for was killing me now at the time. And to have a doctor, the number one liver and kidney specialist in North America, come see me and basically say, man, like, people don't have two of these episodes. People survive one, but there's nothing on record to show that somebody survives two of these episodes. So we only recommend that you take two Tylenol a day. That's as much as that you can take, and you got to thank Jim. I took a 5-hour energy to wake up in the morning. I took 2 5-hour energies to get going on game day. I took an Indocin to get through practice. I took Toradol shots to get through games. I took 800 milligram Tylenols to get just through the night. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't a natural fullback. I had to put on weight to get that. And so understanding that no longer was that going to be my life. Yeah, I was going to be a little bit more healthier, but I needed something to mask the pain. I needed something because my body just wasn't going to be able to hold up. And so I just kind of knew I needed to get through that season. And plus, I knew that we had a championship roster. And so I got cut at the end of training camp, ended up being able to come back 5 or 6 weeks later and winning a Super Bowl, man. It's one of those things that, I couldn't have asked for a better ending to my career.
I mean, dude, that's incredible. Like, Mike, you just laid it out, what you had to do to get through the day to play the game, because we know that your best ability is availability, and you knew that this was your best shot. As you were processing that whole thing, like, what were the doctors telling you? What was your family telling you? Was not playing an option, or were you going to play no matter what?
Yeah, not playing was on the table. Actually, when I got cut, I used to live in Arizona. I went back to Arizona, went back to my house, and, kind of waited some things out, went in the media, did some things, with NFL Network, ESPN, some of those places. And I didn't know. In my head, my career was over. And then, I stayed working out or whatever. And, once my blood levels got back healthy and I started gaining weight again and things like that, I started actively going on shows. And I asked every host that I was on a show with, please, you have to ask me how I'm doing. And so I started recruiting myself. I started basically throwing myself out there. Hey, I'm a Pro Bowl fullback, man. I'm back to 240 pounds. I did 225, 18 reps this morning. I'm literally saying this on national TV, and some of these networks started receiving calls. I started receiving calls. I actually took a couple visits, but I knew Seattle is where I wanted to be. And it was a Thursday night football game. I think it was week 5 where my Seattle Seahawks, we played the Arizona Cardinals. I went up to the hotel. It was in Arizona. I went up to the hotel, hung out with everybody. And the fullback, Derek Coleman, who's actually deaf, so his story is also amazing. The fullback at the time got injured. And at halftime, Beast Mode calls me. I'm in my jacuzzi. He calls me. He's like, dude, did they call you yet? I'm like, bro, aren't you in the middle of a game? He's like, I don't care about that. Did they call you yet? If not, I'm not going back out there. 15 minutes later, John Snyder gives me a call and asks me how I'm feeling. And the next day I was on a plane. So that's the bond we had in that locker room, and that's how we won championships, and that's how I was able to process my future. I knew this was going to be one more season. I knew we had a championship roster. To get your name in indelible ink, to be able to go back to Seattle whenever I wanted to, we had to win that championship, and I had to be a part of it.
That shit's incredible. What an amazing story that is. You know, in today's world, it seems the best treatment is reserved for only a few. Well, Discover wants to change that by making everybody feel special. That's why with your Discover card, you have access to 24/7 live customer service, as well as $0 fraud liability, which means you're never held responsible for unauthorized purchases. Finally, no matter who you are or where you are in life, you'll feel special with Discover. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard. Limitations apply. So beast mode lobbing you a telephone call, like, did you get the call? Did you call? Where are you? When you talk about those bonds, can you even describe? I mean, I can't even imagine. Having never played the game, much less at that level, I will never understand those bonds. But then you've got a next level of those bonds that you must have had in that Seattle locker room. How would you describe what it was like and how tight you were with those guys?
It was our team. It was our team. Pete would come in, and yeah, he had plans about what we would do during the day and things like that. And credit to Pete Carroll, he gave us the reins. I truly believe a coach cannot create culture. I believe a coach can create the parameters for a culture. I believe a coach can create the expectations for the season, and a culture can derive from that. But a culture has to come from the players. And I respect the hell out of John Snyder and Pete Carroll, because every major decision since when I was there, I got consulted on. I got called into the room, whether it was Percy Harvin, whether it was drafting Russell Wilson and we already had Matt Flynn, whether it was, I mean, whatever the case may be, he consulted guys in the locker room. Whether, you know, are guys tired? Do we need to have on pads today? All of those things. So that was our locker room. And we knew that. I've broken up fights. One big one the day before the Super Bowl. If you, I don't know if we won't get into that one, but
can you? Up fights, can you? Are you willing to? I'd love to hear about that if you can.
But I've also had dinners for them same people fighting, where everybody's hugging, and we know that we've had some of the best experiences in the world. But that's what family does, Jim. That's what families do.
Yeah, bro. Did you pretend like you didn't hear the question, or did you ignore the question? What big fight did you break up before the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, it was a little scuffle, man. My man Golden Tate, Percy Harvin, just a little bit of a little wide receiver beef. You know, wide receivers, man, they need the O-line to block. They need the quarterback to throw the football the right way. They need everybody, you know. And they, you know, he got a little heated the day before the Super Bowl. That's all.
I feel you. It's just got to be perfect. You know how they are. You know how they get. Listen, before you go, what about Marshawn? Like, I don't even know how. Where do you even start with beast mode? Like, to block with this guy, to share a running back room with this guy, like, such an a different dude, so different. How would you describe him as a dude and a player?
Oh, man. Genuine, authentic, obviously. My brother, he's babysat my kids when they were like 10, 11 months old to give me and my wife a date night. There's times now where my 14-year-old is on FaceTime and he's talking to beast mode, and I haven't talked to beast mode in 3 months, but my 14-year-old is on the phone with him. I mean, that's the type of guy he is, man. And this guy's an international star. Like, he can go anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world almost, and people recognize his brand and recognize who he is. And, you know, we've been down, like, I've been down the back alley with him, so to speak, in game situations where we've had to really rely on each other. And when you have those experiences, man, it's like we're going to be homies. We're going to be best friends forever. You know what I'm saying? Because of those experiences. And so whenever he calls me, whenever he needs me to do something, I'm there, and vice versa. And actually, I'm, you know, just to give a little tease, we might got a little project that we're working on that should be coming out here pretty soon.
So, I like that. Can you talk about that or no?
I can't talk about it in detail right now.
All right, yeah. We'll look forward to it. I like that. That's smart. Hey, before you go, when you talk about the bonds in that locker room, I mean, you could see it. What about, Mike, back in the day, all the reports of, like, friction between Russ and the LOB because Russ got preferential treatment? Is that how you remember it? Is that how it was? What really happened?
I wouldn't say beef between LOB and Russ, so to speak. I think it's more of just the dynamics of a team, right? When we were one of those first teams to, you know, be really, really good around the quarterback, and the quarterback's on his rookie deal. People understand the quarterback is usually the leader in the locker room, right? But on that team, he wasn't. He was one of the guys. That team was led by a big-time defense, in the running back. I mean, so the guys that we hung out with, you know, Beast Mode and myself, we hung out with a lot of defensive guys. Obviously, we hung out with offensive guys, too. But, I mean, you know, Big Red, Chris Clemens, you know, Leroy Hill, guys like that. Those were the guys that, you know, we were all always around. And so I wouldn't necessarily say it was that. I think it was more of guys on defense, the LOB and things like that, wanting to be recognized for the true special way that they were playing football. And in the media, a lot of times it's easy to just say, look at what the quarterback's doing. And I think that sometimes made for, I don't like to say arguments, heated fellowship discussions in the locker right. room. There you go, Jim.
I like it. I like it, dude.
Absolutely.
That defense, man, what a special group that was. And I can only imagine, like, there might be these bonds and it might be a player-led team, but these are enormous personalities, dude. Enormous yes. personalities. Alphas everywhere. How in the world did you divvy up the leadership? How did that work?
Well, it was one of those, you got to understand how that team was built, right? In 2010, I think Seattle, I think Pete and John had, you know, probably the most business interactions or whatever you want to call transactions of any team throughout training camp and throughout the season. I mean, we made it to the playoffs on a 7-9 team. We weren't that good, man. We really weren't. You know, I mean, we were good in spots, but we really weren't that good. And during that time, when Pete brought us in, because I got there right after training camp, and when he brought us in, there were certain guys like myself, Leon Washington, Red Bryant, who was already on the roster. Well, he told us, like, this is your team. You are directly how in the prototype of the character that we want this team built on. And honestly, Jim, before being recruited in college, and you know how that business is, they're going to tell you what you want to hear. I had never heard that before from a coach. Nobody had told me like that I was the guy that they wanted to build the foundation of their team about. So I took everything personal. I took everything like, no, you know, we're not going to do that. We're doing this. I took ownership in it. Red Bryant took ownership in it. Chris Clemens took ownership in it. When Beast Mode got there, he took ownership in it. And so it was just different. It was just different. And so when Richard Sherman and those guys were coming up after we saw those guys come into the league, I remember Richard right before we played the Cincinnati Bengals. He said, Mike, Rob, I'm getting a start this week, bro. He sat right in front of me. I sat in the second row in the big team meeting room. He sat in the first row his rookie year. He said, Mike, Rob, I'm getting a start. I'm going up against AJ Green. I think I can shut him down. I said, well, go ahead and do it, dog. You know what I'm saying? He said, but I'm going to let the world know about it. When it's all said and done, I said, well, look, bro, as long as you balling and can back it up, we got your back. Talk that shit. And that's exactly what happened. And the rest, obviously, he went out to make a bunch of money and be one of the, you know, premier defensive backs of our generation. You see what I'm saying? It was those types of things, because that personality, who was probably one of the biggest on the team, had people that he could talk to humble him and give him the real. You see what I'm saying?
Like, I do.
To me, that's what builds championship teams.
That's a great story, too. Like, Sherm, from the second he walked in, he's like, I know I can do it. And then you're going to hear about it after I do it. And then the response from the vets had to be, all right, young man, that's fine. Make sure you back that shit up. U.S. Cellular wants to help everybody get the gift of connection this holiday season. Already a customer? This applies to you too, because right now, new and current customers can get any phone, and I mean any phone, for free. Yes, really free. Sounds like it's time to make the switch. Spread holiday cheer far and wide this season with a new phone. Everybody can get the gift of connection at U.S. Cellular. Get any phone free today. U.S. Cellular, built for us. Terms apply. Visit uscellular.com. For details. The thing about Sherm, like, what were your first impressions before you go? Like, that's a really smart dude, right? And that's a dude who came up a certain way, with a certain ferocity. And I'm not saying that's the greatest athlete ever, but man, Sherm was different. What was your first impression of Sherm when you met him?
This dude is super smart.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was a 9-on-7 or something, and he happened to be, you know, messing around and being one of the scout team guys. This is before he started playing a lot. And he told me something about how I was blocking a guy. And I'm like, what the hell are you watching this for? Like, why are you even watching? He's like, he told me, he said, well, bro, in this defense, there's times where I'm the force player and I'm going to have to encounter fullback. So I watch you to see what happens and what you do, and you do a great job. And when you make contact, your feet go on fire. And he started going and all this. I'm like, dude, you play outside. Why
do you care? What are you doing?
This dude is looking at this thing. He's playing chess, not checkers. And he had my respect ever since then.
That's great. Leave me with this thought, dude. I appreciate you so much. When you see, because people made a thing out of this, and you're now in the media, so you can comment on these things. When Sean Payton lights up Russ the way he did this past weekend, I mean, do you have any issue with that? Is that over the line, or is that just ball, and is that just a coach?
No, that's just a coach. And especially, you got to know your coach. Like, okay, Pete Carroll would never do that, because Pete is so positive that he's going to out-positive anything that could – you see what I'm saying? He's not going to go there. Sean Payton is a little bit different, a little bit old school, right? He's gonna put you through the adversity from him, and if you can handle it from him, you can handle it from the world type deal. It's one of those types of – I don't see no problem with it. I got a chance to talk to Russ before that game. I covered that game for NFL Network. We did our pregame show out there. We did, you know, and Russ was in great spirits before the game and after. I think he's playing a lot better now. And less Russ, what I mean by less Russ is less throwing Russ get you more Russ. You know what I mean? Less passing attempts, run the football, and allow Russ to be special in those special moments. But I honestly think Sean was getting at Russ for hiking the football, because I think he wanted them to challenge that play before. So that's what I think the whole thing was about. I don't know nothing for real, though.
So last thought, do you like Russ's response in that moment? I mean, easy for any of us to say how you would act in that moment. I mean, you want to be who you are, right? You want to be authentic. Russ was stoic, dude. He didn't blink, but he didn't react at all. Did you like the way he reacted to that?
You damn right I liked it, because it's showing the competitor in him. He probably wanted to slap Sean Payton in the face.
Right.
He probably did. But he's a respectful young man. And he's showing Sean Payton, yeah, I'm listening to you, but you don't get too froggy.
Right.
Because I'm a young man too. You see what I think? It was just that, it's that ego going back and forth. I have no problem with that. I actually want my quarterback to be a little bit of a killer in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing for that interaction, but shit, with the whole world watching, man, cameras on you and you're in it, that's a tough thing.
Jim, that stuff has been happening since for the last 100 years in football. It's just that because we got more cameras and people can see it now, it makes it wrong.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I'm just saying, man, it makes you more challenging. You're like, everybody sees everything now. It's like, everybody sees. The second you and I, our feet hit the ground, Mike, we walk out the door, everybody sees everything. But that's part of the world, man. The world's changed, right?
It is. It sure has, man. Again, I talk to old guys all the time. They say, man, I would not want to be a young person with all this social media and cameras around now, man. It's a lot more trouble.
No, they grew up with it. It's true. Mike, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, man. I can't believe it's been as long as it's been since we got to get caught up like that, but it was worth the wait. Appreciate you. Appreciate your time. And I know how busy you are, so thank you so much for going long for it, man. That was an absolute blast. You're a pro.
Thank you, brother. Anytime.
How do you not come away absolutely impressed with that cat? What a perfect time of year, too, for a high-quality, extended NFL chat. And Michael was the perfect dude to turn to for that chat. So thanks to my guy for bringing what he always does. Total pro. And again, you can catch more of M-Rob on NFL Network's NFL Total Access every Tuesday and Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. My thanks to Mike. That was an absolute blast. Also, thanks to all of you. I am extremely thankful that I have this platform, and I am thankful to every last one of you who listens every single week. You have stuck with this pod now for 294 episodes, so you know you have my gratitude. And I hope all of you have a happy and healthy and safe holiday season. If you enjoy listening to this pod as much as I enjoy making this pod, why don't you consider finding and then smashing the subscribe button, and I will catch you in the new year for episode 295. See you then.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.